Good afternoon. Thank you. Good afternoon. We'd like to welcome everyone to this afternoon's study session of the Mesa City Council for Monday, July 9th, 2012. We'll begin by reviewing the agenda for tonight's regular council meeting. I'd like to excuse council members Fenter and Glover, who are both out of town. All right, starting with page 2, items 2 through 4A. Items 4B through 4D. Items 4E and 4F.
We'll have a presentation on 4F.
You want to do it now, or you just want to... You want to do it now? Or do it later.
Okay. Yeah, if we could do it now, that'd be great. I just wanted to compliment everybody how quickly everyone came together to get with the neighborhood and resolve a few latent issues that have been outstanding for a while.
And have them come up.
Get a quick report on that.
All right. This is item 4F with it, which is Mesa Grande Ruins Phase 2.
And while everybody's coming up and setting up, I just wanted a little speech making on this one. The Mesa Grande Community Alliance, which is a neighborhood group in Northwest Mesa. About 10 years ago, I identified the Mesa Grande ruins as a point of pride for the northwest side of Mesa, and that they wanted to see a development happen there so we can invite the public to see the great cultural asset that is to Mesa. And this is the fruition of a lot of work, starting with little pancake breakfasts once a year to open the site to what we have today. And so the neighborhood that I represent is very excited about seeing this move forward.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, council members. My name is Tom Wilson. I'm director of the Arizona Museum of Natural History. And with me is Beth Huning, who's head of engineering, and Dan Clevenger, who is director of the Department of Transportation. The slide that you see in front of you is an aerial view of the platform, the Holcomb platform mound of Mesa Grande, which is significant because it is one of the few such remaining sites in all of Arizona in the southwest. It reached its florescence from about 1100 to 1450 AD. Now it is on the National Register of Historic Places, and it is also an Arizona 2012 Centennial Legacy Project. Interestingly enough, it was in 1927 when the city people of Mesa first demonstrated to preserve Mesa Grande, and as Councilmember Richens just said, it's taken many, many years with a lot of effort from officials like yourselves, neighborhood groups, and volunteers to bring Mesa Grande to where it is today.
And Tom, Councilmember Kavanaugh just reminded me that it was about 22 years ago. I was just a young boy at the time.
you were playing on the mound,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I was riding my BMX bike down the mound, so I didn't realize at that time that it was. But it was a Museum and Cultural Advisory Board that kind of really got us going with the purchase.
It came into city ownership in the mid-1980s. Well, yes.
People actually rode bicycles on that? Shocking.
Those one-wheelers.
I would have never done that as a young child.
I know.
It started about with the invention of the wheel, which happened, your junior year in high school, or what?
The current project really began in 2006 when we got a $150,000 grant from the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian Community, followed shortly by a $100,000 grant from the Arizona State Parks Heritage Fund, which allowed us to put in the trail. And so the site that you see there shows us where the visitor center will be there on the south, adjacent to a small parking lot, and the trail structure that is already extant. The trail will have 9 stations with 4 themes carried across the settlement landscape. Throughout the planning, we have approached this with a sort of less is more point of view, that the visitor experience is going to be inversely proportional to the amount of build-out we do there. So we've tried to keep things small. What we really want people to focus on, the visitors, is the site itself, not a bunch of gadgetry that we're putting in there. So we are giving a good interpretive trail, which you can do either accompanied by an educator or take it by yourself. But that's been the perspective that we want to do. We don't want to overwhelm the neighborhood. We don't want to overwhelm the site. So we're going slowly. Next, please. The Welcoming Center and Gathering Place that you see there. In the Welcoming Center, we'll have ticket sales, orientation, amenities such as restrooms, and in the Gathering Place, a semicircular open space that you see out front is for assembly, orientation, and events. Next. The architecture of the Welcoming Center shows you the wings of rammed earth walls with textures and colors redolent of prehistoric architecture, cinder block masonry with colored block rose keying off Native American designs, a roll-up entryway to blend indoor and outdoor experiences, and a viga and latia ceiling from prehistoric roofing patterns. The gathering place out front that you see is a semicircular flagstone courtyard for orientation, meetings, events. The canopy is covering for shade, and the whole indoor-outdoor experience is meant to transition the visitor to the prehistoric landscape of Mesa Grande. The key elements, we're running an annual 7.5 month schedule to begin October the 1st to May 15th. That's obviously just to accommodate the summer season when we don't think it would be as popular with visitors as it would be in the cooler months. It will run Thursday through Saturday 10 to 4 and Sunday 12 to 4, and the cost will be $5 for an adult, $2 for a child. Our guided tours, where we'll provide guides, will be $4 each, and there will be joint ticketing with the Arizona Museum of Natural History. So our philosophy here is to start slowly and build, work out our kinks, see what happens, develop educational programs, and also provide on-site and electronic interpretation. I mentioned the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian grant was $150,000. We had an Arizona Heritage Fund grant of $100,000. We've expended on the current project about $200,000. So what we're going to ask you to approve today is the remaining over $600,000 in expenditures to do the Gathering Place and Welcoming Center. We want to thank the neighborhood groups, the Mesa Grande Community Alliance, the Santo Tomas Neighborhood, the volunteer groups such as SWAT, and just the people of Mesa who for years and years have fought to make this a public amenity, which we're now on the brink of doing. And specifically, I want to thank Councilmember Richens, who throughout the years has been tremendously supportive of this project, has worked with us, worked with neighborhood groups to help bring this project to fruition. So thank you very much, Councilmember Richens. And now let me turn this over to my colleagues.
I'll take it from here. I just wanted to touch base on some of the things I talked about last week. We have had a problem out on 10th Street in the past with speeding and cut-through traffic. If you look at the slide, you look at the 1998 counts. These show three different count locations where we've been monitoring. Back in 1998, we had traffic volumes ranging from 1,900 cars a day to 2,900 a day. And there was a legitimate speeding problem out there, looking at the 85th percentile speeds. What we did back in 1998 in the fall, we installed six speed humps. And they really have had a helped us have a great deal of reduction. We've rerouted traffic to 8th Street and University, but more importantly, we've been able to cut down speeds considerably. Speeds are down from 18% to 23%. That's 6 to 8 miles per hour. So I think it's been very successful. I anticipate with this development of the visitor center that it's going to add just a little bit of traffic. I don't think it'll be very noticeable, and frankly, these aren't the type of people that I expect to be racing up and down the street. So I'm hoping that there's very little impact seen by the neighborhood. Next slide, please. On this slide, you'll see a red or pink-shaped triangle that's owned by Maricopa County. We're in the process of trying to acquire that so we can put in the bus pullout that I referenced last week as well. The bus pullout outlined in blue will be will accommodate two school buses. And we think we can, I think we can have that ready to go by opening day. And our goal there, again, is to confine the bus traffic to the Brown and Date Loop and keep them off 10th Street. And I think the neighborhood would appreciate that.
So with that, we would like to ask you tonight to award the contract so we can begin construction. As we look forward, we've got some construction outreach underway. We did meet again last week with the neighborhood representatives and Councilmember Richens and go through the plans again. We also are planning a public meeting. I don't think the date has been set as yet, but we'll very quickly be having a public meeting. We will be also scheduling a groundbreaking and then a grand opening as we complete the project. So those are all in front of us. So if you have any questions, we're here.
Okay, any questions? Thank you. Councilor Richens, you okay with that? All righty. Thank you. All right, moving on. 4G through 5D.
Do you want to leave 4G on or you want to do a separate vote?
Why would we need to do a separate vote? I'm sorry, what? I'd say leave it on consent. Okay. Items 5E and 5L. Yeah, Mr. Brady.
We do have a presentation for that. For those, well, actually one group of items regarding the agreements.
Items 5E through 5...
J?
J, is that what it is?
I believe so.
Yeah,
correct?
J.
So we could have that presentation. It would be okay. We could have that
Let's go ahead
that
and do it right now. And these items all relate to the Escobedo redevelopment project proposal.
Correct.
Ms. Zelanka.
Morning. That would be afternoon, sir.
Sure.
Mayor and council.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere, right? Oh, wait. That's talking about something else, isn't it? Sorry about that.
We're here today. You have 6 agenda items on the council agenda for this evening, and I just wanted to go through them very quickly. This is the Escobedo at Verde Vista apartment complex. As you'll recall, it's 11 acres approximately north and south of University. The north of University is residential, low to moderate income, 30-year lease with a 15-year option to purchase. The south side of University is the community services campus, and the primary organization at this point in time is Save the Family. I think we just went over that. What you have are 2 leases. The project is being split into two separate phases based on the low income housing tax credit program from Department of Housing. Phase one has already received their notice of award, and then we are currently asking you to enter into lease and development agreements with the second limited liability corporation. The development agreements, as I said, will be recorded now, both for the first phase and the second phase. There will be 2 lease agreements and 2 land use restrictions. And basically what we've done here is propose that north of University, the land use be restricted to what is currently projected there, the low to moderate income residential units, and that south of University, the uses are consistent with the services currently provided by Save the Family. Just to briefly review, this project first came to you back in February with a very broad overview of what was being proposed. The last time I was here was June 21st when we had the specific deal points that we went over. Just wanted to confirm that prior council actions have not committed the city to anything to this point. This is the first time that you're actually being asked to take formal action. If the current agreements are approved, they will commit the city to the future project. The organizational structure, under the low-income housing tax credit program, there is a private investor. In this case, for phase one and for phase two, the private investor has not yet been named. The remainder, 0.01% of the LLCs, both LLCs, are Gorman and Save the Family. The LLCs have been formed as a subsidiary of Gorman and Company. One of the things I wanted to point out is because the equity investors have not yet been named, they may come back with proposed modifications to either the leases or the development agreements. The way we have the deal structured is that any proposed modification to those documents will come back to council for final approval. There's no staff authorization there.
Let me ask you this. Has there been any discussion as to what those modifications might be?
Yes, we heard.
On a general basis?
Yes, we heard last week that typically the equity investors will not commit to an agreement unless they have longer-term lease agreements, something in the range perhaps of 60 to 75 years is what we were told last week.
Well, and Mayor, the point there is last week. We've been working on this for a long time. These terms have been out there. It's getting very uncomfortable. We understand these deals have to be brokered and investors have to be brought in. And it's not that we couldn't do something like that. It's just the fact that we're doing it at the last minute. Because we've suggested we had the option after 30 years for the purchase of the property. So it wasn't, you know, the idea of having a long-term term isn't necessarily something we're opposed to. Matter of fact, we were actually trying to find a way to convert this permanently. It's just a little disconcerting because one of the other projects we work with when we were going through the negotiations of the agreement, had the investors sitting at the table with us. And so we understood clearly what was happening. It just appears that this deal is still being marketed at the last minute, which I guess I understand to a certain degree. It just seems like it's a little late in coming. The difficulty for us is this. We've spent a lot of time, and Christine has spent a tremendous amount of her efforts in getting to the point where we are today. As we all know, I believe the date for this to be have to be approved to demonstrate to Department of Housing is in October.
Well, they have to have the lease recorded by July 16th. That's why we're here tonight.
But it could change. My point is it could change again, and that deadline is in October.
Yeah. Yes.
Which doesn't give us a lot of time again. We don't know. It's the unknown, I guess, that what we're more fearful of than anything else, based upon the where we are today, where we felt like we all had an understanding until last week. So it's hard to go in good faith negotiations and then find things that change. We don't do this. We don't get 65-year agreements without some discussion about consideration, the restrictions, how that's all going to work. So it is somewhat discomforting at this late in the game to have this conversation. We're certainly willing to make it happen. It's not typical for us to come to you with an agreement with the idea that the other side is saying we're probably going to change it. And that's the only thing that I would, but it's necessary in order for us to meet the check the box with Department of Housing. But I just want to make sure the council understands this could be a very different. In the long term, it probably looks similar, but it's going to be the terms are going to be laid out differently.
I guess the question is that the agreement as is, we need to decide can we live with that?
That's the first thing, sure.
If we can live with that, what we have on the table, then it's the applicant. If they want to come and try and change it, to me the burden is on them to say why they need to change it, and then we can either say yes or we can say no, doesn't work for us. It would be, for me, I would much rather we have all those issues resolved. But really, the question is, can we live with the agreement that we have right now? Can we live with
it? And we would recommend the agreement that we have today, that we spent the vast majority of time negotiating, we would recommend that to the council today.
Okay. Councilmember Richens?
Help me get some clarity here. The driver of this shifting date is what? Equity investor? Or is it another driver?
The date where these commitments have to be made, the July 16th.
No, I understand that, but what's driving this potential future change in terms? Is it the investor when they put their money into the deal they may want?
I understand it. There is not an investor signed up today for this deal.
So potentially, an investor who comes
until
into this
such
deal.
Time that the developer, the 0.01%, has brokered the deal to an investment group. We don't know what those terms of that group will be.
Okay, so whoever comes in might want to change the terms of the deal. They may come in and be fine with the terms of the deal.
And we would hope that that's what the current developer would recognize that's significant for us and not represent that the city is completely flexible to come up with any other deal. I mean, not that we couldn't, but it seems like we've spent this much time and it's been represented by the developer that this was fairly good terms. But then at the last minute to tell us, well, we may need to change that, and the council needs to know that when we take action. We just don't usually come to you with a recommendation that is.
So the deal you're bringing tonight, you're comfortable with?
We are comfortable, yes. We would recommend
30-year lease term.
30 with an option to purchase at the end of that term.
And then so what I think I'm hearing you say is when that equity investor comes in, they may want to come in and negotiate. And I think the message to the applicant would be, you're taking your chances when you do it that way.
The message we want to deliver, because the other way was they wanted you to know that they could change the deal, and I really feel like it needs to be the other way. They need to go sell this deal.
No, if we approve a deal, that's the deal.
They need to sell this deal.
Yeah,
well,
is in the best interest of the city and you guys.
Right. And Councilman Richens, Mayor, this is Brian Swanton with Gorman & Company. We do have an investor. We normally don't select an investor until after we secure an allocation of tax credits. You can't really place an investment until you have that investment in hand. So we had 12 equity offers unsolicited on this project. We have selected one. We're negotiating terms as we speak. This issue of the lease term is really a first time in in our world that we've seen this, and I'll explain why just real briefly. The state requires a 30-year lease, and we've always structured this deal as a 30-year lease from day one. In all of our other lease transactions that we've ever done, we went back and researched this. They've all been 99-year leases because in most states, including Arizona, that's considered the equivalent of fee simple title. What we're learning is on a leased transaction, on leased land, what the Tax Credit Investors Council is communicating to us, and we've checked this out with three different investors, Bank of America, Chase, and Boston Capital, as well as the National Equity Fund, which is a LISC subsidiary. They're all saying that the tax code on lease transactions requires the improvements to be owned by the tax credit entity. Well, when you don't own the land, the lease term has to be substantially longer than the expected life cycle of the project. And based on IRS terms, that life cycle is determined to be 50 years. That's sort of industry standard, apparently. And what people get hung up on is substantially longer. So here we are facing a situation where the state requires a 30-year lease, and we've met all those requirements, and that's what's before you tonight. We're learning now, because we have selected an equity investor, we haven't signed them up yet, we're negotiating terms with that highest priced offer. They're communicating back to us very early that this lease term could be a real problem. So we just wanted to communicate that as we found out about it live to city staff and to you.
Councilmember Higgins, I think, has a question.
What I wondered, you said this would be the first vote where we could be out something.
My point was, we don't usually bring to you a recommendation where we tell you up front. We usually give you a recommendation that sticks, that both parties have come to the table, everybody's negotiated the terms, whether it's the financing group, which in this case represents, we frankly, I just assume have the financing group at the table, because frankly, they're the one they're coloring this deal. It's the developer's not coloring this deal, they're brokering this deal. If we can have the finance group sitting at the table with us, then we can work out deals about leases with purchases or longer term leases. But the problem is, we've been negotiating with one group and then find out last week it needs to change. So we just like to have the investor at the table when we're negotiating, and that's typically what happens. We don't allow for us to get in this position. But I understand this is the way the process is. They didn't even know they had an allocation until recently, and so they have to go out and do this.
But let's redefine our position. Like Councilman Ridgen said, if we approve a deal, that's our deal. That's on the table. It's the Gorman's burden to make that deal work. Right. If they can't make that deal work, and what we're hearing is, right now that you might not be able to work that work date. That deal work. It's still your burden, because you've got a deal that's approved that doesn't conform with what you say you want to change. You'll have to come back to the city and propose those changes. We then have the right to either accept those or say, no, we approved a deal.
And
is that clear with you?
We perfectly understand that. Okay. We're perfectly comfortable with that.
Now, we're just talking the lease terms. Are there other terms in this agreement as far as property use? Are there substantive terms as far as property use that you right now foresee maybe coming back and trying to change? Or is this primarily a finance-driven item?
This is purely a finance-driven issue. It's a tax code issue.
Right.
It has really nothing to
do
with
it. So you look at it as a technical issue that's driving this, because the tax code defines what term you need to be able to comply with those
right.
tax.
Exactly. Okay. It has nothing to do with the business terms. It has to do with bringing a lease in compliance with IRS code.
Now,
basically.
I understand that. I can't speak for everyone else here. I would have an issue if also included coming back, there are business terms that need to be changed. I don't want to go down that road. I get where you're coming from as far as, they may need to tweak it to conform with your financing, as long as it doesn't change the business terms. I do have an issue if we're going to go down a road and approve something under one set of business terms, knowing that you might come back and ask for an amendment to those business terms. Now, granted, going from a 30-year lease to a 60-some-odd-year lease might change a business term, and I don't really understand that, because one of the things I think that we were talking business term wise is, what about our rights if these units are sold to a third party?
Right.
How does that change that?
And we put the restrictions on the property such that they would have to come back to the city to remove the.
Okay, so that's one thing that just I think for me personally, if the lender had a problem with the value of the property upon sale, that to me would be a change in business terms. Deal terms, as opposed to technical terms. I would have a problem with that. Mm-hmm. So,
Another question I have, we discussed about negotiating good faith as we move forward. Remember that word, Debbie? So the question is, we approve this tonight, and later on there's some deal that needs to change, and we just say, no, we don't want to do it. Would we be not negotiating good faith if it was pulled that, oh, the IRS requires this such and so? And
no, both parties, I think, have been negotiating in good faith. They've learned an issue that's developed. We've not agreed to a term, but both sides are willingly entering into the agreement that's presented to council tonight. They understand that any change will have to come back to the council, and it will be completely within the council's discretion to approve or disapprove that.
So later we can say that just is unacceptable,
yes,
and we negotiate in good faith.
Yes.
Okay.
If I could add just one thing to that, we do have very specific language in both of the development agreements and both of the leases that any modifications come back to council. So that's actually in the deal points and in the documents.
And then one important business term that won't change is remember that Save the Family has a right of first refusal to purchase the entire project at year 15 anyway. So, you know, keep that in mind. But we totally understand where we sit right now in terms of the deal points that you're approving. And if any changes need to be made, we have to, you know, come back and request diligently any changes to that agreement. We understand that.
And the burden is on you.
Absolutely.
Okay, and the burden gets higher the further we go from technical changes to substantive changes.
And I'll do everything in my power not to have to come back to you.
I think we would appreciate
yes,
that.
Yes, I'm sure.
No,
okay, is that, we all clear on that? Mm-hmm. Where we stand now? Any other questions? Yeah, Councilman Higgins.
Yeah, just to Chris. So what would be your recommendation?
Well, here's a difficulty. When you're negotiating, you really try to put out the concepts that are important for everybody to live by. This idea now that leases are difficult and can't be financed certainly would have been nice to have known, you know, weeks ago, because certainly you can structure what currently looks like a lease actually into a purchase. You could have 30 years of whatever the nominal payment that's being made to a balloon payment in year 30 that's equal to market value of the land, which is essentially how the lease reads today. But from a financing guy, he's going to look at it and he's going to say, I have title to the property, which is important for the collateralization of the deal. I didn't know that. That information wasn't shared. We can work those deals. We have a capacity to do that. We've done these deals before. It's just the uncomfortability of going from all this time about talking about a lease won't work. I think what council said here tonight is very helpful. I think they need to see what they can work out, because the terms of a deal also mean what is the developer going to receive when they sell this deal to the brokerage company also.
Well,
so
both
sides of this deal.
And that's the substantive part that right now we understand we're setting where we feel this should be. Now, if those lease terms affect the substance of that very issue you're talking about, that's where you're going to have a big hurdle, mm-hmm, in my mind, because I'm not really prone to support something that would change that concept.
Okay.
And I'm seeing nods here that the rest of the council would have a real problem if we change the basic concept, which deals with what happens in 30 years and what is it. I mean, I think we're okay with the fact we are giving up control of this property to get the development. Mm-hmm. But we also said from day one that there would be a point in time where there would be I would call it a true up.
There you go.
The market value, the city was not foregoing market value forever. And that there would be a time, if there was a disposition or some other thing, that the city would have monies coming in. If you can work out your lease deals where that concept still holds true, I personally have no problem, and I don't think that, because I don't think it would violate the concept we're talking about.
Right.
If you can't do that without that, well, then we'll have to see what you come up with. But I would say that I would be prone to say that concept can't. To me, that's a very basic concept that can't change.
Right. That's fair.
Okay. And Dennis is nodding, so, and he's not going to sleep nodding. I mean, he's nodding in agreement. For the record, he was nodding in agreement. Does that make sense? Is everyone okay with that?
Good direction. Thank you.
All righty.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just to confirm, the residential units north of University, the deal point is when they're sold, it would be fair market value of the land.
Right.
So that's one of the current deal points.
That would come back.
Yes.
To the city.
Kind of already talked about this, but the financing for phase one is a combination of low-income housing tax credits, home funds, both state and City of Mesa funds, and then also conventional loans for the construction. as we've discussed, Gorman must accept the DOH award by July 16th, and they have to show that the lease has been recorded at that point in time. Their rent-up operating and replacement reserves that are in the agreement are in conformance with Department of Housing obligations. If they... Did you have a question, sir?
Oh, no, I'll wait till the end. Go ahead.
Okay. The current deal point is that if Gorman and Company does not accept the DOH funding this year, or if they can't put their financing plan together, they must notify the city by October of 2012. Based on prior council direction, where we talked about giving them two bites at the funding apple, if they don't get funding for phase one, or if they do not accept funding for phase one, they would be given exclusive development rights for phase one for next year, 2013. Again, the proposed scope of the phase two is approximately 54 units, an additional 15,000 square feet of the community services camp building, a proposed conference center that would be a shared amenity between Save the Family and Mesa United Way, and then possibly an 8,000 square foot carve out north of University for Helen's Hope Chest. And Mesa United Way has until October to let Gorman know if they want to take them up on that opportunity.
Now, remind me, plans and everything for phase one become our property if they don't develop phase two?
If they develop phase one.
And they don't develop phase two.
They do not.
I don't want to get stuck not having plans. I want to be able to walk out and develop phase two consistent to phase one, which would mean we would have rights to utilize the plans if we so choose. They become that's typical in an option deal, and basically that's what we're doing is an option deal. And when you split the option, where we're you follow what I'm saying?
Mayor, why don't you would probably need to ask that, because I don't think we have that covered in the deal.
No, because I brought that up a while ago. To protect us, because here's our downside. We have two downsides. Number one, they do phase one and they don't do phase two.
Okay.
Well, our downside is, what do we do then? Do we have another developer come in and start from scratch? It may not be economically feasible because the number of units left in phase two to develop all new plans and everything that are consistent, I don't want to have to pay for a new set of plans or have a developer bear the cost to come in for a new set of plans. I want to be able to use those plans. That's typical in a land option deal when you have development, where you know, I have to turn over my plans so the next developer of the city can use those plans without having to start from scratch.
Well,
for the housing units.
Mayor Smith, we could, Gorman and Company is the architect of record on the project, which actually makes that a simpler proposition. I think what we could agree to do, I'm not sure how we do it legally here, but is just agree to do a simple assignment of plans,
exactly.
Which we...
And a license to use those plans in that
right.
phase. It wouldn't be broad-based, but it would be a license that we could assign to a developer simply for that phase two.
Yeah, I would not have a problem with that.
Okay.
Could you just,
all right.
You want him just to amend it?
This,
or to include it now?
Yeah. Mayor, Council, if that's the Council's desire, what you can do with in the motion, we can say that it is approved subject to adding a provision to add that language.
Okay.
So we'll have
and
Kevin work
out
in. Is that what you want Kevin
later.
To do? Okay. So Kevin will have to get that language.
Okay. Does it have to be removed?
No.
You can add
It'll
that.
Be read in.
Yeah, we'll read it in.
Subject to
Observe.
That provision. The second thing, just a question, are we bankruptcy, those kind of things, can they control this or transfer this property through a bankruptcy proceeding? I'm looking at the ownership on that with the .0001.
I
don't want to lose control over this through a bankruptcy and all of a sudden have somebody that we didn't do a deal with that being in control through bankruptcy proceedings, because we basically lose most all rights in a bankruptcy proceeding.
Mayor, members of the council, Donna Bronski from the city attorney's office. The way it's set up is that there are deed restrictions that limit the uses, and while we've agreed to subordinate the city's interest to that of the lender so that they can negotiate and get a good lender, the deed restrictions are in there with the idea that they will need to come back to the city to clear the deed restrictions and before they can actually market it for a non-low-income housing.
Will that survive a bankruptcy proceeding, in your opinion?
Yes, we think that will...
Okay.
We do.
In other words, you've attached it to the land.
Yes.
Right.
Which keeps it out. Because what I'm worried about are those...
Contingencies?
No, those 0.01% entities. The lender isn't...
Right.
You know, the 0.1 is going to go bankrupt.
Well, they're going to get kicked
out. Then there's a foreclosure.
They're going to get kicked out by the financial group because there's
well, if they go bankrupt, then the financial group will foreclose, but what they can foreclose on, you know, gets really complicated at that point in time. I just want to make sure that the lender isn't bringing someone in under the auspices of bankruptcy that we may or may not want to work with as the replacement partner, LLC.
Yeah, I think, Mayor, what we agreed to do is to allow the developer, this was important to them, this was a do-or-die issue, that the financing group had the ability to bring in a different operator, developer,
right,
at their choosing, which we allowed to happen. The restriction then, we said, though, is the deed restrictions on the land had to comply with the type of project,
okay,
that we've been talking about here.
All right,
that was our control.
Okay, that's fine. As long, okay, as long as we can control the property,
yes,
then I'm okay with that.
That's
okay. All righty. Any other questions?
Just to clarify that those deed restrictions are attached to the land in perpetuity.
Right. Yeah.
They don't go away at year 15 or at year 30.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay.
Any other questions?
I think we pretty much already talked about this. The other thing I wanted to make clear, again, based on prior council direction, is that if they proceed with phase one, either this year or next year, we are then giving them two additional years, two funding cycles to develop out phase two. So we basically, at the outside, they have exclusive development rights until 2015.
Yep.
Any further questions?
I think we had a long discussion on that before.
Yep, so.
We already talked about that.
Okay. Any other questions? All right, so we'll include that one amendment as amended.
And Donna's going to be with Kevin, so we'll make sure that it gets read.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, 5L, 5K, 5L, 5M through 7A. All right. I think we've included all of our presentation. There are certain appointments to boards and committees that were given to you. Motion from Councilman Rich, second from Councilman Kavanaugh. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion carries. Acknowledge receipt of minutes from boards and committees.
Second.
Council from Councilman Rich, second from Councilman Kavanaugh. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. We have no items from citizen present. Okay. Presentation action item.
This is under
your reports in our meetings and conferences attended. Councilman Kavanaugh.
I have a very brief report. One of my non-council roles is serving as a state officer for the Sons of the American Revolution, and they're having their annual convention here in Arizona this week. And very pleased to announce that two Mesa Police Department detectives, Dan Engel and Reggie Marshall, as well as Southwest Ambulance paramedic Jerry Sinica, were selected to be awarded national awards for heroism, and those awards were presented this afternoon. So
awesome.
Kudos to those three individuals. Thank you.
Good. Thank you, Councilman Kavanaugh. That's the same thing. That's different.
No, it's different. That was a garbage bag.
Oh, okay. Councilman Higgins.
Mayor, I think we attended the groundbreaking for the Mesa Urban Garden.
That we did. Thank you.
So I just wanted to point that out. Is the iMesa project, correct? That has moved through the system, and we broke ground. It's going to be a community garden right on First Avenue between Hibbert and Mesa Drive. Is that Hibbert?
That's Hibbert.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it's going to be a transformative project right here in downtown Mesa, south of Main Street. So it's going to be very fun.
Thank you. Any other reports? Mr. Brady.
Mayor and Council, I know we need to go quickly. Go ahead and start pulling up your item. We have a groundbreaking this Wednesday for the spring training facilities and the Riverview Park. We're kicking off both of them at the same time. Wednesday morning, 8 a.m. So 2202 West 8th Street is approximately where the golf course clubhouse was. And also, Vice Mayor Summers, this month, July 27th, will be having a free drowning prevention event, and that'll be at the Skyline Aquatic Center, and that will begin. It'll start at 8, go till noon on the 27th. And just the reason I'm giving these dates that are far out in the future, this will be our last council meeting. And as we go on break, we'll return again on Thursday, August 16th, for a study session. And real quickly, Mayor and Council, you received this over the weekend we sent out to the community. Just want to highlight the work of Pearl Anderson, who, working with Natalie Lewis, put together the annual community report. We just wanted to maybe show maybe five different slides real quickly before we go upstairs. Just, this is something we would encourage the council to use to send out to your constituents, neighborhood groups, kind of a summary of activities and events that have happened during the past year with a budget summary included. Perla, real quick.
Mayor and Council, good evening. This and second annual report builds on last year's report, and every year we plan to make it just better and better, beginning with the Mayor and Council message and sidebars. This year we've chosen to sidebar the new CUPS facility. Second page, we highlight the council's strategic initiatives and quote from council member Dave Richens. Third page, message from the city manager and our quote from
I think they're related, so it's okay.
But he's posing with it. It's almost as bad.
It doesn't matter.
His alleged grandson. A la Ben Quayle.
Carly, just keep moving along.
His rental kid.
His rental kid.
We have the innovations with
he's
impact.
He's not here. We can pick on him.
Which were a focus of this year's budget, and a quote from Council Member Dennis Kavanaugh. And it continues with quotes from Council Member Dennis Glover and Councilwoman Dina Higgins.
Chris Glover.
Whatever, he's not.
Who knows Dennis very well.
Then we have a page called Fun Facts, and what we wanted to highlight here is the day-to-day work that the departments do that not necessarily make the front page of the newspaper. And we have here Vice Mayor Scott Summers.
And
fun facts.
Something substantive, but fun.
And finally, we have our financial overview, which goes over the available resources, the budget by fund, general fund, and the expenditures. This was sent out electronically, and we are working to put it out to staff and the community, and would ask that you put it out to your social media accounts and get it out to your constituents.
So, Mayor and Council, we're not printing off copies this year. We're just making it done. We could, but we're really, it was intended, the format is more for digital distribution.
Very nice. It was well done. Even the alleged grandchild for thank you so much. It was really good. Okay. Ms. Crocker, we don't have any requests to speak, do we?
No requests.
Good, because we're going to adjourn this meeting and meet upstairs because we have a very special little event that we're going to have prior to our regular council meeting. So we'd invite you all upstairs, or if you want to stand on your staff and watch it on TV, I guess they can broadcast it. Yeah. Okay. So I have a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Kavanaugh, second from the Vice Mayor. All in favor say aye. We are adjourned.